Welcome to Pitch Deck Series 5, where we'll be having bite-sized conversations with established investors in early-stage startups. Looking to provide you with great nuggets of information when raising or considering raising seed capital. Pitch Deck is supported by Trumpet. If you work in sales or marketing and are tired of spending hours a week creating sales decks, then Trumpet is for you. Design personalized, interactive, and trackable mini sites in a few clicks. Stand out from the crowd whilst also giving your customers a seamless experience from pitch to onboarding. To find out more, visit www.sendtrumpet.com. That's sendtrumpet.com. And join the best in brass. So I'm absolutely thrilled to welcome a friend of mine, Jay Radia, to the Pitch Deck studio today. Jay is a serial entrepreneur and has founded three successful businesses, now worth over $500 million combined. So we're not using the word serial entrepreneur lightly here. He now spends his time in three areas. Number one, building tech companies through his startup studio, Bliss Growth. Number two, co-hosting the podcast Happy Millionaire, which is in the top 10 on Apple and Spotify. And it's two friends having fun, talking about startup success, happiness stories. They have guests on as well. I've been a guest on there, so definitely go and check that out. And third is, of course, angel investing, where he has done over 40 deals to date. His passion is about bringing joy to work, loves talking about entrepreneurship, happiness, while also having fun at the same time. So all of those ethoses resonate highly with me. So Jay, really looking forward to this chat.
Yes, awesome, Nick. I know it's been in the works for a while, so very, very happy to be here. And hopefully I can give as much value to your listeners.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I think, and this is me saying this, I think you're probably one of the most under-recognized founders in the UK in terms of you've had two sort of ballpark wins with Yieldify and ReachDesk, and your next one is now ScreenLoop, which I'm actually an investor in as well. So when it comes to B2B SaaS, I think, yeah, you're one of the best founders out there. You also have raised a lot of money in your time as well. So I think we can get a lot of value out of you. So I want to start on the angel side versus the founder side. So from an angel point of view, are you verticalized? Are you tailwind led? What sort of gets you excited when looking at pitch decks at the moment?
So I guess one of the lessons I learned early is like try to invest in things which you know. I know it's so basic and it can sound a bit boring because you're like, hey, I'm pigeonholed because this is an area I know. But I know B2B software really, really well because I've now built many companies there. I know the workings. I know what the founder's going to go through. I know how to scale it up. I know about the fundraising. So I know all the moving parts in B2B SaaS. So for me, that's my wheelhouse. And so that's where I normally focus. However, I have, dived in and delved a bit wider out and I've done some B2C. I've done some like fintech. So I have done different areas. However, the majority, like I'd say 75%, 80% is in SaaS because that's what I know. And it's, yeah, so that's something that I learned and that's where I focus.
And I totally agree with that thesis. And out of interest for the other sort of the other 20 odd percent that aren't in SaaS, what had to be proved to you that they were worth investing in if it wasn't in your wheelhouse?
So I'm quite, I'm not going to lie, I'm just going to say it straight. I'm a bit of a lazy angel investor in terms of like most of my deals come referred to me. It's very like in order to decide whether you're going to make an investment in a company, you have to put a memo together, right? You got to put all the financial insights. You've got to, has the founder gone edge? Is the space gone opportunity? What's the competition? Like, there's a lot of research that needs to get done, right? So if anyone's doing any angel investing, make sure you do like a memo or some thorough work. So I normally piggyback off some of my friends like you or whoever sends me deals. And so that's how I do my investment is, yeah, I normally, all of the deals I've done have generally been referred.
Yeah, I mean that, speaking to a lot of investors on this show, I think that a lot of them say that the best deal flow indeed comes through like WhatsApp groups or emails from friends where a lot of the due diligence has already been done. So it's more like, do you just like what they're doing? Which, yeah, is a much easier.
And make sure you look at the memo, right? I think some investors go, oh, this great deal looks great. And then you ask them, hey, but why? And then they give you these two or three, you know, obvious things, but, you know, have they actually put together a memo? Like the best, the guys who are leading angel rounds or, you know, seed, like early seed, pre-seed, you know, they'll put together thorough memos. And then those are the ones you want to get your hands on and see, you know, does this all check out? So I normally do that. So it has to be someone that I trust and someone that I know within my network. And number two is they put together a good memo and they've done the diligence. And then I will then have a conversation with the founder and then look to invest.
And as a successful founder yourself, you look at probably founder suitability through a different lens than, say, a VC. What, when you speak to that founder, what are you really looking for? And what do they need to show you that they're backable?
Yeah, there's, you know, my attributes keep on changing as well. So it's interesting, like, because as I start getting more experience, I'm starting to work out, you know, what bits work. One of my friends, she's an investor from EQT, it's a lady called Naza. She looks for killers with hearts. I did actually like that. So, you know, everyone's got their own formula. I'd say for me, it's someone who is super passionate about the space that they're in to the point when they've got an unfair advantage. That's what I look for. So like, have they got an unfair advantage? Because Nike or not, if the space is hot, you're going to get 10, 20, 30 competitors. And if you check out those 30 competitors, only, you know, let's say a space has got 30 competitors, which is, you know, quite typical, right? Only the top three are going to make money. The others aren't. Like, you're not going to make much money. You might get, you know, if you do the bell shape, like the curve, like you'll have the top three will make maybe somewhere between 5 to 50x. But then, you know, the group after that, they say rank 3 to rank 10, they're only going to make, like, they might give you your money back. So you have to pick the person that has got an unfair advantage. And that's quite, you know, and usually what I look for is product-led CEOs. You know, I'm actually more of a go-to-market CEO, but I've turned more into a go-to-market slash product CEO, but, you know, that's me learning. But generally, you know, if it's a first time you're going, it's not like, if it's your first rodeo, it's pretty clear you're going to be either, you know, you're going to be focused in go-to-market or product or CS or marketing, whatever it is. But I generally find that product-led CEOs are, I know it's an obvious thing to say, but, you know, are you really a product-led CEO? Don't pretend you are. So I will catch, like, you know, I look for that. And how I check for that is that I try to solve problems with them in their space. It's something that I learned actually from Fred from Stride, because he did it on me, and it was the best thing he did was that, you know, we were solving problems live about the product. So he could see whether I was thinking the product through. So that's something I do now with founders, is that when I'm conversing with them, I'm trying to solve a problem live with them on their product. And we're talking about product. So I can see how good they are in product. So that's, you know, another thing I do.
Yeah, I really like that. And what would your advice be then if, and I get people writing to me a lot about this, is, okay, I'm a solo founder. Let's say I'm product, but, you know, I'm not an engineer or I'm not a marketeer. And, you know, you obviously need all of these cogs to sort of make a startup successful. So, you know, if they are just one of those and they're a solo founder, how can they get that across to you that you're still in safe hands, even though there's clear gaps missing in the founding team? And is that a problem if there are gaps missing in the founding team? Would you encourage them to go and find a co-founder, for example?
Yeah. So for me, and look, data shows it. I think if you look back at the last like 10,000 companies, like all the companies have IPO'd, generally the evidence is the most successful one had like two founders or three founders, like that. The data's there. The reason why, it's quite simple, right? You've got the, you know, unique cases when there's one solo founder like Drew from Dropbox. There are a few unique cases, right? However, 2-3 is more likely because, you know, you've got someone to talk to. Like being a founder, and, you know, anyone that's listening who's founding a business or is founding one, is a super lonely, hard job. Even if you've got two founders, it can still be quite lonely because there's still some unknown. So in my mind, I don't like to invest in solo founders. It's very rare I do. Because I'm just doing it for their own sake. Like, it's just a human thing. I just think what you're about to put yourself through is torture. So I'm not gonna fund that torture for you. Someone else might do, but I don't feel it's the right thing for me to do. So, you know, jokes aside, I feel, yes, find someone. How do you find someone? You know, ideally it's someone in your network that you've met previously through, you know, your work or university. Or number two is, you know, if you can work with an accelerator or a studio. So, you know, for example, in Bliss Growth, we actually combine founders through our networks. So we offer that service. But, you know, for us, it has to be second time founders. But maybe there are other programs like Entrepreneurs First and Antler. And, you know, there's a bunch of them where, you know, it's first time founders and they can do some matchmaking. So I do think there's another one called Zinc, which I'm invested in. So yes, those paths do work. I feel those are probably your best paths. You know, you can go to networking events and find all those. That's another route. But yeah, I highly recommend you do find a co-founder and, you know, try to use your network and or join an accelerator or studio.
And you've obviously said you prefer to get your deals referred from people you trust, but I imagine people still outreach to you direct. What tips can you give to founders on your view on the best way to outreach cold if you haven't got a network already of VCs or angel investors?
Yeah, it's a really good question because I get so many messages, and I'm sorry if you do message me. It's I don't usually reply because I just get so many. So my advice would be, I call it the super angel. Like my advice would be try to find a super angel. What's a super angel? It's basically an angel who is super connected. And once you get that person in, they will get your next 10, 15, 20 people. What's a super angel? It's someone like Nick, probably someone like me. But then your question is like, hey, you just told me you don't, I only need to go through referrals. Okay, so if I know you, that helps, right? So, but then how do you build a relationship with me? Through getting referred to me, right? That's it. You have to get referred to me. So, you know, and I'm just not using me as an example. Same with Nick, you know, a lot of these super angels, because the super angels are getting so much deal flow. So I feel, yeah, try to find a super angel, because once you get that person, they'll get loads on. So like, you know, seed funds. So like, you know, my friend Reese, who runs Concept, or you can go to like Stride, like a bunch of these VCs, they will, you know, if you can get a small check from them, they will invite other angels and other funds. So you need to look for someone who's super connected. And once you do that, then get their check and maybe just strike them a deal, give them some advisory shares, like, you know, try to get them on board, convince them. And then, you know, on the back of that, they will then get a bunch of others. So for example, in Yieldify, I had a guy called Hussein who runs Hoxton, who's a good friend. And basically, you know, when he invested, he then told everyone he knew, and we took $20,000 or £20,000 from him. Next thing I know, I had another 1 million wired to me in the next 2-3 weeks because of his network. So, you know, it does work.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's really good advice. And yeah, I totally agree, because as an angel, if you do commit, you obviously want the backing of other angels you trust also going along the ride for you. So you will then do the hard yards for the founder to try and get other people in. And now with like all the vehicles like SPVs that are really easy to set up, you'll find actually super angels setting up their own SPV. And then actually do the fundraise almost for you, because then they're obviously going to get their carry. So yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So I think, and you know, the super angels will be the ones that have probably done lots of investments, right? There's probably lists out there. I'm not very good. I haven't even put myself on there, but I'm sure Nick has. So, you know, you have to just find those angel investors who are very, very connected up. And there's a lot of them. I'd say in the UK, there's probably 50 of those people. Now, if you can get hold of one of them and you get them to invest, it's very likely you're going to win.
And we're as founders used to early stage and invest early stage. What would your advice be if your first time founders, your pre-product, so your pre-revenue raising, you know, a smallish pre-seed, how can you show, let's say, angels at a pre-seed that you've got an idea, you've got a good go-to-market, and this product has something about it, even though you've got nothing to show for it? What would you expect to see at pre-product, pre-revenue level?
Yeah, well, first of all, welcome to the game, those people. And number two is I would say I rarely invest in pre-revenue like most angels, because that's, you know, imagine like just flip the switch. It is a super high risk bet. It's like, you know, A, I don't know, can you deliver? Number two is, you know, how much do people want your product? Like three is like, can you actually execute both of those, right? There's so much unknown on the idea and the person. So my advice is like, I like watching people who have bootstrapped and have put some product together. Like I don't understand why they can't, especially as a first time founder. You need to earn the stripes. Like I earned my stripes. I put in 20,000-30,000 of my own money, or I raised I believe most people can raise 10, 20, 30, 50 from their family or through themselves. Because if you've not even saved like 10, 15,000, 20,000 pounds, I think you doing a startup is probably personally a high risk.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if you really believe in yourself, which I believe most founders do, right, well, put some of your skin in the game. Like, you know, I remember when I first set up Yieldify, I lived with my parents before Yieldify started. I lived with my parents for 2 years. you know, 2-3 years, I sacrificed everything. I, you know, put a lot of money in. You know, it was a really tough period, but I knew, you know, I wanted to win. I wanted to do this. So, you know, I feel, you know, going pre-revenue, you're wasting your time as well, because you're trying to pitch something which is unknown to someone you don't know. The probability of that happening is like less than 1%. Like, and then you're going to spend 3, 6, 9 months doing that. It's just, you might, in that period of time, you could have built your first version of your product. And there's so much services out there, so many agencies and places that will help you to build your first product. Like, why don't you just like open up that door?
And no code tools now, like Bubble, and you know, you can get products.
Get some contracts signed, like show some evidence. Like, you know, I don't like it when founders are trying to, you know, get other people to bet on them and then, you know, ask for valuations. And I totally get why you're doing that, by the way. I totally get it. But you got to look at it from the other side, from an investor perspective. Would you invest in someone who comes to you blank? And, you know, I'm only saying this because I believe if they just spent 3-6 months like building a product and trying to sell it, they'll A, know if the idea works, and that's good for them. Because, you know, fundamentally, the most important thing that this person's doing is dedicating their time while they're on planet Earth, right? You are investing precious time in your peak years of your life building this product. Like, make sure it works. Make sure it's the right bet you want to make, not even for the investors and for the money. Like, you're thinking so much faster. I'm thinking, hey, does your thing even work? And you're going to spend your precious time on it right now, today. I think that's the big question you want to solve. Does it actually work?
Yeah, and I think a lot of founders don't think about that, and they just jump straight into it without doing adequate speaking to people, networking.
Yeah, and so did I. So I can't, you know, I'm speaking to my fellow brothers and sisters who are on that. But, you know, when I look back, you know, that's the question you want to solve for. Like, this thing actually work? Like, park the money and the ride and the journey and all of that. And I know you might not like your current job and whatever it might be, but like, does this thing actually work? Like, you need to know yourself.
And I want to flip it slightly to you as a founder who has raised a lot of money. One thing I haven't talked a lot about on this show, but now I've got you here, I'd like to dig a bit, is we talk a lot about the deck, but then that 30-minute meeting with probably the associate at a VC. What tips would you give for a preparation for that meeting and then handling that meeting to give the best impression possible?
Yeah. So I would say there's always this like natural thing with founders, right? Do you speak to the associate, VP or partner? There's always this like debate, right? You know, one thing I've learned is that the associates and VPs, they're the ones that are producing the material, the memo. They are basically doing all the grafting for the partner to then make a decision, right? So I think some founders sometimes don't appreciate the analysts or the associates or the VPs or the principals, whoever they may be. And one thing I've learned is that they're all actually pretty equal in that they all have an important part to play. So I've seen a lot of founders sometimes treat some of the people in a VC not like in, you know, in a fair way, right? They're just not giving enough respect. So I think that's something I just wanted to just make sure it's open. Like, all positions within a VC, I believe, are important, and they're all part of the decision. So I think that's one thing I want to state. So, you know, in terms of the preparation of how you should look at it, is it's very, very important you do your research on the firm, because, you know, it is a two-way relationship, right? I think sometimes founders get really arrogant, and I've been part of this as well, right? You get caught into it where you're like, hey, like, you know, I'm going to get, you know, all the VCs are going to like this idea and they're all going to come for it. And, you know, the more I've been in this game, it's like the VC that you're speaking to, or this associate, like, they may not like your space. And that's normally most the case. So VCs have already been told which areas they're going to invest. They already know inside, these are the segments that they're going to focus in. And yes, they've called in a meeting for you because maybe they're curious, right? Or maybe this is the space that they're looking at. But after the meeting, you'll know. So I think it's very important to do your research on the VCs, see if there's similar companies that they've invested in, like do your research, your diligence on them, you know, their fund size is there, and like all the information is there, how long their fund, you know, their last raise. So you can work out roughly how much of the fund they've spent of the money. So I feel sometimes founders, you know, ask very basic questions, and you can, you know, there's an opportunity right now. You've got 30 minutes with someone, like ask the questions that actually mean that are important to you. Like maybe ask them about your space, and then you can see if they know your space. I feel like that's what's important. In terms of preparation, you know, yeah, do your research on who you're speaking to and on the fund. Like that's very important. And then in terms of the pitch, just be concise. and ask them what they want to know. I think so. A lot of the founders, they, you know, they like to just show their, you know, deck, which, by the way, the VC's already asked for it. They've already reviewed it. I'm telling you right now, they know a lot about your deck. Once they see a 3-minute deck, they know, they've already programmed, like, the way a VC's mind works. They know a lot about you and the company from just looking at the deck. This is what they're trained to do. But I think a lot of founders then state the obvious again. So it's very important, ask the VC what they want to know and let them, I actually like to let the VC lead the conversation.
And sort of just say, you know, you've seen the deck. What do you want to learn more about? What are you, you know, is there anything here that you want to learn more about to make you invest? Is there anything?
Exactly. And I like to also send a product demo video before as well, so they can watch the demo. Because let's be honest, that, you know, VCs know that the product is critical, right? So they want to see the demo. So either you spend 5-10 minutes doing the demo on a, during that 30 minutes. And then look, you know, if you've only got 30 minutes, you can just, I remember, you know, if you look at it, you've got 30 minutes, generally someone's 5 minutes late. So now you're left with 25 minutes, right? And you know, the last 5 minutes is about closing and next steps, right? So then really you've got 20 minutes. That's all you've got. And in 20 minutes, you can only ask 3 good questions. That's it. That's it. Like, well, how's your pricing? And that's another 5-minute conversation. Let's be honest. Or it's going to be some like, oh, there's going to be some information of the future, your TAM. You're like, it'll start diving into loads. So that's like one question. Number 2 is like, tell me about yourself. That's another 5 minutes gone. So like, you've got one question left. So, you know, the time is so precious. So let them, you know, let them have the 3 or 4 questions, because that's all you got time for.
Yeah. And you've got to make sure that once you've left that call, they've got all the information they need to sell you internally.
Exactly.
And well, as we're saying, 20 minutes flies by. So just one last question for you. We might have to do a part 2 after this. Is, could you also just give some tips for inexperienced founders raising money on then getting the deal done? Like how do you effectively move a deal along? So, you know, step one, you send out your deck. Step 2, you get 50, 30 minute meetings. How can you then as a founder move a deal along more effectively?
Yeah, so... And then they look, the angels you're speaking to right now, they're getting so many other deals. So you have to, the truth of the matter is, in that 30 minutes, the angel is going to say yes or no. That's what they have to, you know, they can't do multiple meetings. If they do multiple meetings, it's like, it's not efficient on their side. So, you know, in that 30 minutes, you need to really prove to them the value of this company. And after 30 minutes, most angels have already decided. They may do one more meeting, but generally they've all decided. So you've got to be very, very succinct. You know, that's why I like to send a demo video before, because I, you know, that doesn't lose me 5-10 minutes in the 30 minutes I've got with them. They're always looking for social proof angels. There's a thing that, you know, it's just a sad truth. The startup world is the majority of people, I'm not saying all of them, they just follow each other, right? Same with angels, same with VCs. And I get it, because if someone's done the research and someone is willing to put a large amount of money, there's something here. There's something there, right? So your best bet is to try to find, again, it goes back to the super angels, it goes back to someone who's really connected, and make sure you can get them on board, because that will be the social proof that you need and will get the other angels interested. The other thing, my real advice is, like, in the first people you approach, make sure there's people in your network. So let's say you're raising $500,000. Please, please, please raise 100K from people you know. Give me, like, you know, please show to me that there's friends that you have or people in your network that believe in you. And, you know, at least a quarter of the round is done. Because if you're coming to me and, or just to any angel, and you're raising $500,000 or $1 million and you're at like 30, 50K, that's very worrying. And, you know, this is your moment where, you know, all your current network, like all your friends, family, your old boss, you know, your boss or your colleagues, this is where you chip in and get some money in, because do not start on a blank. Like, make sure at least 20% of the round's filled. And when you're speaking to your friends and family, you tell them, hey, I'm doing 100, like, you know, I'm doing a family round, are you in? They're not going to question who else is in, because they love you, they trust you, but you need that support initially.
And what if, you know, if you come from, you know, a background where, you know, your parents can't chip any money, or your, you know, your friends, you know, you say you're in your very early 20s, your friends just don't have any money. So, you know, if you are from a standing start, do you just have to be exceptional, is what you're saying?
No, I think, you know, in that case, can you chip in a few thousand here and there from people, like your friends' parents, or like, you know, you got, at the end of the day, you have to, in the, you know, being an entrepreneur, you have to be, you've got to be opportunistic. You've got to find the opportunities, because that's a signal to the investors that, you know, you can make magic happen, because creating a startup is not easy, right? And, you know, you have to prove to the people you're speaking to, people that are going to put their hard-earned money as well into you. No matter how rich they are, they still worked for their money. I think we can't judge that aspect, but they're going to be investing some of their money, and they need to see evidence that you have got that ability to create things, right? And in this case, it's raising money. And by the way, if you are in your early 20s, awesome. This is when I started as well. And by the way, I went through 13 ideas, all self-funded, and I lost like maybe a few thousand here and there. It wasn't that much, because set up a company these days is not hard. And maybe it's idea 5 or 6 that gets funded. So I think for the guys who are in the early 20s and maybe don't have money, just play the long game. I'm telling you now, it will work out. It will work out. If you really want it to happen and you're doing the right things, I guarantee at some moment you will see some success. I've not seen anyone who's gone all in. I worked really, really hard, did the right decisions, was humble and learned the right way. They always do have some level of success. I believe that. And I know whoever's listening and is in that zone, trust me, you will win. You will get what you want, but just give it time. So initially it might be, you know, it might not scale up. You might be able to raise money, but I'm telling you, at some point you will win. I know you will win. So just give it time.
Well, on that very positive note to everyone listening, I think, yeah, we'll maybe look to do a part two with you, because there's a lot more I want to question, but I like to keep these
awesome.
As short as possible. So people can head over to blissgrowth.com to check out Bliss Growth and listen to your podcast, Happy Millionaire, on all the platforms. Is there anywhere else people should be looking for you?
No, we're all good. I'm on LinkedIn like you, but Nick is way more legendary than me on LinkedIn now. He's way more on there. But yeah, I've been a bit lazy in the posting. But yeah, if you go on Bliss Growth, you know, as I said, we're looking to work with second-time founders to scale up companies. And yeah, my podcast, Happy Millionaire, those are probably the best places to find me. And yeah, just want to wish every single person listening, honestly, the most success in whatever they're doing. And, you know, as I said, I really do believe everyone, if you have the focus, you're humble, you do the right things, I know good things will happen to everyone. So yeah, wishing everyone the best.
Brilliant. Thanks for joining us, Jay.
Awesome. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. And if you enjoyed it, I'd hugely appreciate it if you can share it on socials or indeed just with your network. If you're feeling extra generous, I'd absolutely love it if you could leave us a review on Spotify, the Play Store, or iTunes. That is the only way we get more listeners. So thanks for that. And just to remind you that Pitch Deck is sponsored by Trumpet. So go check out www.sendtrumpet.com.